Learn the most empowering hiring techniques. Land the most desirable talent. Launch your company towards massive success. This is the Higher Power Radio Show with your host, Rick Gerard.
All right, well, it's human nature to get away from pain as quickly as possible. And as painful as it is to have an open role, it's even more painful to fill that role with a person who brings on more pain. And that pain is most often delivered in the form of the wrong person in the right seat. So today we're going to delve into and talk a little bit about what it means and how to have the patience to work through finding the right person for the right seat. I'm Rick Gerard, and welcome to the Higher Power Radio Show. We help entrepreneurs and executives win-win the strongest people. We do so by sharing insights from top-performing rebel entrepreneurs, game changers, and industry leaders like our guest today, Mr. Jeff Leitman. Now, Jeff is the founder and CEO of Rocksteady Corporation. And Rocksteady specializes in the production of the Rocksteady Stadium speaker system, renowned for its high fidelity and connectivity and distributed across North America. Family, team members, and creating positive and supportive work environment are the foundations of the organization. And as a hands-on CEO, Jeff prioritizes the development and empowerment of his team, partners, and vendors, fostering sustainable and long-term relationships, which is what makes Jeff the perfect expert for today's topic. Jeff, welcome to the Higher Power Radio Show today.
Hey, Rick. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. I mentioned at the top, we're talking about kind of right person, right seat. I kind of want to remind the audience of kind of what this means. Right person means the person aligns with the company values and buys into the mission and is positioned right for the organization. The right seat is the skills and the capacity to do the work. And I find that we focus so much on hiring for the skills because I just need somebody to fill the seat to do the work. I'm triaging the pain. And what I found is that when companies focus 100% on the skills, now you're shifting 100% to a hope model. Gosh, I hope this works out. Yes, you get the role filled, but the chances of success diminish greatly. So, Jeff, what's been your experience with that? It's a lot to unpack, right?
Yeah. You know, you kind of learn things through trial and error. And we've had some great hires. We've also had some hires that didn't work out. And largely, it comes down to really our faults. You know, were we rushed? Were we projecting what we wanted to see into candidates? Did we do our homework? And by homework, you know, it starts before the first interview. Did we really define the job interview? Define the job description? Really outline what are the must-have characteristics? What are the want-to-haves? And then also, you know, at the end, did we go through the steps of checking references? Did we go through the steps of really looking at additional candidates to make sure we're making the right decision? You know, we've seen so many times that when we've had a good hire, it's been this explosive growth where it just brings new energy and productivity. And when we've had bad hires, it's been really disastrous where it's brought down team members and it's impacted beyond just that role, but into others.
I think that's the thing we forget about, especially when we have a need. You go into temporary amnesia of what happened the last time you brought on somebody that didn't fit. In your experience, has it been more of a skills or a didn't align at all with the culture or the mission of the company scenario in most of your cases?
I think skills can be learned. In order to learn a skill, you have to have passion about that area. Mm-hmm. So we've hired people before early on where the person was the right fit, and we put them in front of YouTube and had them learn how to do things and how to learn areas. That was when we were really starting up. But even then, so it's true now. If you have a passion for a particular job, you bring more energy into it, you have an open mind to learning more about it, how to do it better. As long as that person is growing and putting the energy to be productive and to grow within that role, those people always work out. And that's something that is just really, you can't fake that.
I always fall back to the story about Amazon, how they weigh a lot of their decision based on whether or not people align with their core values first, what they call their leadership principles versus their skills. And you brought up the perfect point. People can learn new skills. That's what we do as humans, right?
That's right.
But how we naturally operate, when you put somebody who naturally operates in the same environment where the skills become easy to learn, like you said, it uplifts the rest of the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we forget, you know, I believe strongly that business is personal. We come in, the people we work with, they're like our families. We don't have to always love them, but we work with them. We're part of a family. We combat, we agree, we celebrate, you know, and we have to be able to appreciate each other for what we bring. And I remember once there was this job interview, there was a guy I was looking to hire, and I was down to two or three candidates. And, you know, I think I'm a pretty good boss. I think I'm fun to be around, but he didn't think so. He came forward, I remember, in this interview, and he was like, okay, you know what? He didn't feel that it was going to be a fit. And I was like, oh, thank you. You know, it's better to, you know, I was trying to fall in love with you. If you don't love me, then that's perfect. You know, let's remain friends and continue in our own directions.
You know, that's a great point. And a lot of us see, especially entrepreneurs, we see that as a challenge. Like, oh, we're being denied. That's a bit of an ego hit. And I think that fighting for it at that point is probably the bad call. And I've seen a lot of companies do that or entrepreneurs do that. I got to get this person on board. Now it's a personal challenge.
Yeah, but we've done that with vendors as well, where it didn't look like it was a fit. And the fact that they didn't want us made us want them more. There's got to be something there that what are we doing wrong? And yeah. It's funny.
Well, yeah, we just got to be okay with it.
For sure.
What's the most important piece to you that's been the most important piece for the company?
So first of all, we're trying to achieve big things. We've got lofty goals. We're trying to provide growth and opportunity for our employees. So coming to work, you know, the most important part of work is work, which means we definitely look for people who are hardworking. They understand that what they're signing up for. We like people who focus on the details when it's part of that role. You know, if it's a creative, yeah, either way, you know, details is how you get things done. I'm very much about execution. It's easy to come up with ideas. The work comes from implementing them and refining them and going back to them and going back to them again and back to them again and again and again. And so, you know, really it starts with that, you know, can we rely on these people? Can they be part of what we're trying to achieve? And can they do some heavy lifting? I think that's really what we look for.
We talked offline about you having the patience to do that. And again, the focus is more about doing diligence to make sure that it is a fit as opposed to just getting a person in the seat. Skills-based hiring is so transactional. And quite frankly, when you focus 100% on that, it does become very problematic. All right, you're listening to the Higher Power Radio Show. I'm your host, Rick Gerard. And for our podcast listeners, we're going to take a quick educational moment from our sponsors. Hey, I'm digging in deeper with our guest, Jeff Liebman. He's the founder and CEO of Rocksteady Corporation. And we are discussing having the patience to hire the right person in the right seat. So just kind of discuss a little bit of the problem, but now I want to delve a little bit deeper. Do you have a story you can share with us, Jeff, or something that can kind of demonstrate how you've approached this problem in such a way that you're making strong hires for people who align both from a values perspective and skills?
Yeah. So early on, some hires that we made that maybe didn't work out great were really started off where I was projecting into somebody what I wanted to see, dominated the conversation during interviews, led them towards answers I wanted them to say, and avoided the elephant in the room, which is my new favorite, or not my new, I think that's been my favorite thing in the world. Every time I enter any situation, I take a piece of paper, I write down, what's the elephant in the room here? And I make sure that we attack head on. I'm a pretty direct communicator that way. You talked about patience, and it's funny, I smiled when you say that, because I think my family or people that really know me would be surprised to know that I am extremely a patient person, because in some circumstances, maybe they don't think so. I'm incredibly patient as long as I'm seeing progress, right? And are we headed in the right direction or are we headed for a cliff? If I'm headed for a cliff, that's when you're like, oh boy, you know, your stomach starts to drop, you know what's going on. and making changes quickly is probably the best course of action. But when you see progress and that progress can be validated, you know, I've had some employees, man, they know how to answer a question. They know how to tell you what you want to hear. They know how to take ownership of a situation. But when it comes time to really executing what they've learned or the lesson that was learned in a situation, some people are better than others. And so, you know, as a kid, you know, even now, I love basketball. Team sports are my favorite. And, you know, when you can have four great players on a team, and if the fifth player is just the wrong fit, it brings everybody down. And it's like you're playing 5-on-3. If you bring the right person on, it's like you're playing 6-on-5. All of a sudden, you have this force multiplier effect. So not only who works well with you, but how do they work well with the others? How do we eliminate egos from the conversation? You know, I believe in a very, while we've got a org structure from a standpoint of the right to communicate and the right to be creative, we look at a fairly horizontal where everybody's voice matters. And so we want to make sure that we're really taking egos out of it. And the ultimate goal is the only focus. And we reward the overall success and people's contributions, but we certainly prioritize, you know, just winning. The company's got to be achieving its goals, and how we get there is everybody should be excited and pushing for each other.
You know, it's funny. I do you know who Jack Daly is? He's a sales coach, been around for a long time, super dynamic guy. I did a training with him a few weeks ago, and one of the things that he said was, every sports team runs better than your business. And he stressed this really, really hard. And he goes, you want to know why? Because every sports team, Little League Baseball, they all have a playbook. And guess what? Your business probably doesn't even have a playbook. And this loops me back into the first point that you brought up, was defining your position in detail and making sure that your people's have all the have to have criteria. Let's talk a little bit about defining that position for you. How do you guys do it in such a way that really brings clarity and exposes the elephant in the room, so to speak?
Yeah. I think it's the old fashioned way. It starts with a piece of paper or a Word document. You write it out. You
can't. No way. We write stuff down.
I've got papers and pens all over them. I'm still old school.
But I still have post-it notes.
Yeah, it starts with bullet points. You know, ask yourself the tough questions, like the easy question that's hard to answer. What is the job title? What is the job description? What do they want them to do? How do we measure their success? What are the key skills or the key touch points or the key experiences that they need to have? And the process of writing down good questions is really only half the battle. The next question is to answer those questions yourself. And that really prepares you from a frame of mind. And also, so you, when you go into an interview, you can have that check mark, you know, where you know you've touched on the important things and you don't kind of send them home and realize, oh no, I forgot to ask this, or I'm unsure or uncertain about that. And so it's just discipline. And, you know, discipline is the energy that drives all good decisions.
One of the key things I heard you say there was, you know, defining down the characteristics or the measurables or the things that are going to define success in that role, taking them down to performance metrics. One of the things we do is we drill it down to, what's this person going to accomplish, be expected to accomplish in the first 30, 60, 90 days? I learned this from somebody else, but the whole point of it was that, look, if you go to college and you join a class, they give you a syllabus for the year, at least give somebody, you know, something to measure themselves by, rather than, hey, welcome to the company. Here's our great onboarding process. Now go figure it out.
Yeah. And that's hard. You know, not every, yeah. You know, it's easy. It's almost easier to replace somebody than to fill a new seat, right? Because the old person did something. You knew that this was her task or his task that he did from 9 to 5. But the new role, you're optimistic, you're growing, you're trying to drive some productivity in a new direction. You've got to bite the bullet to know that whether that's a full-time job that you can fill and how much you can afford to pay for that, and does it pay for itself, and so on. And so these new roles are the ones that challenge you, because you always say, well, if they can just do this and something else, but if you don't really go into what are those other things that can be, then you don't really know whether you've gotten the right person that can that can be more than just the minimum and maybe provide new experiences and viewpoints that bring added value.
Share with me your thoughts on this concept of not overplaying your emotional position in the interview. How does that manifest itself as you're talking to people?
Well, for starters, try not to answer their questions for them.
Feed them their questions ahead of time, right?
That's right. Let them talk. Silence is an interesting thing. So allow there to be some silence and see how they fill that silence without it being uncomfortable, of course. Ask specific questions, but maybe some open-ended questions as well. And from an emotional standpoint, you know, my daughter, she's just graduating college and she's probably been through this generation now. She's had over 300 interviews now. It's so easy to set up.
300 interviews?
I think so. That's the number she's
telling me. I need to coach her on how to target better for, you know, that's a lot of interviews.
I welcome your help. We'll set that call up.
We'll talk offline on that one.
She comes back after I teach her the same principles, you know, right after the interview, do what I do. Take your piece of paper right after the interview and write down your memories. What are the key things that were talked about on that interview? What's your key takeaways? So that later when you come back to it, you don't have to recall on an emotional response or some sort of vague memory. Make a recap for yourself so you can lock that moment down in time. And that'll prepare you for the next interview. At the same time, it'll remind you really what happened. What did you hear? And that's that extra piece of discipline. Again, it goes back to that piece of paper and bullet points that really drives how I can jump from idea to idea and without forgetting things.
What I found works really well is start with an open-ended question and then drill down on that, like dig deeper. The purpose of an interview is to understand the truth of the human across the desk from you, just as that's their purpose as well. They want to know, you know, the fact that guy shared that he didn't think that he'd want to work with you, that's a good thing. But at the same time, you want to be able to open up a story and then drill down deeper on the story, because that's where my grandma used to say the devil's in the details. She was like a crazy devout Catholic woman and everything was about the devil. So she scared the hell out of me when I was a kid. But other than that, that's my trauma. Starting with an open-ended question and then drilling down on it and then, you know, really understanding the story that unfolds behind it is very powerful in at least loading up evidence to support, am I making the right decision here or am I just hitting the surface level?
Very much so. You know, open-ended questions, especially strategic ones, are exciting because sometimes you'll create an open-ended question where it's almost also an interesting journey to see, will they get to where you expect them to get to? Are they focused? Are you on the same wavelength? And so watching that unfold is exciting. We do the same thing now. You know, we have a lot of vendors as well. So we've got partners that we meet with weekly and regularly. We've interviewed them and gone through RFPs, and we treat them really the same way. We treat them with respect, you know, as though they were our employees. So, we're respectful to them as individuals, but at the same time, we manage them to an expectation of productivity that we would expect upon ourselves. And that's been a new thing that for us is where we've always felt a little bit with vendors sometimes, well, we can only hope what they're doing in the background is what we want. But the more we've been involved with them as people, the more we've created these connections and the more we've held them to some standards and expectations, the more satisfied we tend to be with them. And it's reciprocal because their results are better and they feel a deeper connection to us as well.
And those are usually the best relationships and, you know, they're set up from the beginning to succeed. That's great feedback. The other thing I wanted to kind of dig into was process, because you don't have a normal, overly formalized process, I think, that you had mentioned before. But process is important. So how are you conveying or how are you able to ensure that your people, when they're doing the interviews, are extracting good data? What are you doing there?
Well, I think what you're referring to is from an earlier conversation is our concept of the butterfly effect, right? Is that sometimes I want to put my imprint on things later in the process so I can see how things evolve before I've influenced the outcome. So sure. If there's someone else is interviewing someone before or after I'm interviewing that person, yes, I ask them to be prepared. Yes, that's part of our culture that they're going to be, you know, that they're going to do that hard work and they're going to bring their own twist. But oftentimes I won't give them the bias that I may have come up with, or I won't give them the conclusions that I've already come to, just to see if they come to the same place and end up the same place I am. And if they're at a different point, then that's interesting. You know, that's something worth looking into. And if we're at the same point, then it's validation. I don't get, you know, we talk things through, but I don't go into as much detail to overly influence these discussions ahead of time. There's probably a balance there, and I'm not sure we're done finding that right balance, but it's something we're playing with.
So are you talking about influencing the decision-making on whether or not they move forward? Or are you talking about whatever your general, just not sharing or influencing their interaction with the person?
Well, when I'm getting feedback from somebody else, if we're in a joint interview, or if I send them off on their own interview where they're going to interview them before I interview or after I've interviewed, then in that case is where I'm going to try to get as unbiased a position. And yeah. So I'm not going to overload that other person, and I won't go first with my response. I'll seek their response first. I've been around other business owners who, and myself probably historically, where, you know, right after an interview, I'll then turn to the other person I'm with, and immediately I'm beaming with confidence, and I'm selling them on my beliefs or my viewpoint, and that may be blocking them from being, you know, productively providing criticism or a counter viewpoint or something else to consider.
It does. Nobody wants to go against the boss, tell you you're crazy. Yeah. I agree with that 100%. I think that data should not even be considered, and you should definitely go last. And as a matter of fact, play poker in that meeting, because quite frankly, you don't want to give anything away. You want honest feedback. Ultimately, you want to get the strongest person in that seat no matter what. And the only way you're going to do that is let the evidence ring and be open to the fact that you're going to be wrong.
For sure. Yeah. Don't rush the process.
Here's the thing. As an entrepreneur, I don't know if you're like me, Jeff. I really want to like everybody that I bring in here. I remember I used to find myself going through, I don't do this anymore. I go in blind now because I want to go in with no preconceived notions. But I remember finding myself going on the LinkedIn pages and seeing what their interests are and then looking them up on Facebook or Instagram to see, do we have any commonalities? And I'm always looking for reasons to like people. And I would definitely telegraph that when we were doing the download meeting at the end. Gosh, I'm super excited about this person. Let's talk. I think that's the big discipline area that you really have to focus in on is, I'm not going to say anything or do anything. I'm going to let you guys lead this. And then I'll share my opinion at the end.
100%. I think poker was have your poker face. Absolutely. it's funny because, you know, there'll be those situations, whether it's that or any situation where I use that poker face mentality where, someone, you know, will be collaborating or discussing through something and they're trying to read into my body language how I'm reacting, and I'm leaving them out there to kind of dangle in an uncomfortable space and take a position. And then I kind of, play my cards, and then it's the tension's broken, but I enjoy that for sure.
We're getting pretty close on time. Jeff, what would be two or three key takeaways you can give the audience that can plug into their business today?
Don't rush the process, be disciplined, put a pen to paper or into an Excel spreadsheet or digitally, have that discipline to really be prepared for every meeting you're in, let alone a job interview. It's exciting to hire someone because it means you're growing, unless you're obviously hiring someone to replace, in which case it's also exciting, an opportunity to maybe find someone who can bring a new perspective or do the role better. And you know, sometimes it doesn't work out and you lose a great candidate, but you know, there's lots of good candidates out there. So don't feel that if you don't grab this one individual you know, your life is on the wrong path. That rarely is the case. So don't stress that.
Yeah. There's plenty of fish in that sea, right, Jeff?
Yeah, and a lot of people, there's a lot of great people out there. Everybody has a unique personality and set of traits, and everybody given the opportunity to succeed wants to succeed. So, you know, really feed their confidence, and it's rewarding.
So very true. All right, Jeff, thanks so much for your time and investment today. And I want to welcome you to the Higher Power Radio community. What would be the best way in which members of the audience can find you and reach out to you?
Email is great. Our website's rocksteadyaudio.com, and you can contact us through our support email. And I'm happy to hear if someone wants to write this down and wants to contact me directly. It's my email address is JLEITMAN. So J, then my last name, at rocksteadyaudio.com.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Higher Power Radio. Huge thanks to our team, Brian Colburn, Andrea Ballin, and Ayla Gerard. If you're listening to the podcast, please subscribe, review, and share. After all, this show's for you, and we want to bring you valuable content week after week. You can join the Higher Power Radio community at Higher, H-I-R-E, Power, P-O-W-E-R, Radio, R-A-D-I-O.com, or you can drop me an email at rick@intertrue.ai. Tune in next Tuesday. Our guest is going to be Chris Kirksey. Chris is the CEO of Direction.com. I'm your host, Rick Gerard, and you have been listening to the Higher Power Radio Show. Aloha.
Thank you for listening to Higher Power Radio.
Catch our LinkedIn Live show every Tuesday at noon, or download the podcast on iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, or your favorite podcast platform.
We appreciate you joining us on Higher Power Radio
with your guide to hiring success, Rick Gerard.